when we look at human beings, we find a lot of the same things. The same issues keep coming up. The same questions keep coming up. And that's true regardless of culture and really regardless of time period. We, last week, had some things to say about racism and discrimination. We tried to distinguish between the two. You can make a distinction between racism and discrimination. And we got down on the study sheet, as we said, to point 23. If you need one, there's still some in the back. And we want to begin today with Genesis chapter 9. Now, you may not remember exactly what's taking place in Genesis chapter 9, but Noah, we don't know exactly what happened to Noah, but something has happened to him where he was not treated in a good way. And we read about the curse of Ham in Genesis chapter 9. Now, for us, if we went back 30 or 40 years, the curse of Ham probably was something that would have been talked about a little bit more. For us, we probably just think, well, that was the curse that was placed upon Ham. But if you go back 30 or 40 years, or you go back 100 years, anybody know why the curse of Ham received a lot of attention? Really? I'm shocked. They would talk about, especially, like I say, you have to just go back 30 or 40 years, you could go back 100 plus years, they would say the curse of Ham was dark skin. Black people and the curse of Ham, they make a connection there. So if you've never heard that, now does that ring a bell with some people?
Yeah.
Okay, a few hands. Like I say, we've kind of lost that as far as history, and that's a good thing, but that's kind of gone by the wayside. But if you were to Google the curse of Ham, you'd pull up just a whole bunch of stuff, and that's still sometimes discussed. And that, of course, goes back to Genesis chapter 9. If you go back, and again, this takes you back to, what, 80, about 40 years. Point 24, dark skin was not the curse, though Mormons kept black men from the priesthood till 1978. When we start looking at the last 20, 30, 40 years as far as some of the things that have taken place with race in our country, some can remember the race riots. You're old enough, perhaps, to remember that and some of the other things, and not just in this country, but other countries as well. Well, it's always good when people start bringing up a Bible verse or a text to support something, to go back and see whether or not it actually teaches that. Let's go back to the book of Genesis for a second and take a look at Genesis chapter 9, verses 18 and 19. Now, let's pick up 25 and 26 first, and then we'll take a look at 18 and 19. Who wants to read Genesis 9 for us, verses 25 and 26? All right, Steve?
Then he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants. He shall be to his brother." And he said, "Blessed be the Lord, the son of Shem, the god of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant."
Who do you think was doing the speaking there, God or somebody else?
I could have asked him to back up. I probably should have asked him to back up to verse 24. Noah's doing the speaking. Now, when people come along and say, well, the curse here was the curse of dark skin. Wait a minute. Was that God offering the curse or was that somebody else? Noah. Now, could Noah have been speaking for God? Well, yes, that's certainly possible. But before you just run back to Genesis chapter 9 and say, aha, this is it. Let's see who's talking about that. And then you should back up a little bit. Genesis chapter 9, Steve, if you're still in the chapter. Do you want to read verses 18 and 19?
Now the sons of Noah who went out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Ham was the father of Canaan. These three were the sons of Noah. And from these the whole earth was populated.
Thank you. Hopefully the spirit of my question is easy to see. What should Genesis 9 verses 18 and 19 teach us about racism? There shouldn't be any. Why not? All right, there are only three boys. And everybody can be traced back to one of those three. If the curse wasn't black skin, anybody know what it was? The Canaanites. That was the family lineage. They became those ites, and you get in the land, you possess the land for a period of time, and what happens to you? You're going to get the boot. And some of you are going to get killed. That was the ultimate fulfillment of this. This had nothing to do with black skin. But it's like some other things in the Bible. A person gets an idea, and they want to use the Bible to prove it. So they will find a passage or maybe multiple verses that in their mind supports their cause or their position or their belief. And they'll go and they'll start using those texts or those passages. And it really doesn't work out very well when it's time to go back and actually study that. Anything that you want to add or ask about that before we move down and change gears a little bit? Okay, let's look at point number 27. And this is going to be tied in with Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 1 through 3. Let's get somebody lined up as far as being a helper for that as we ponder our question in the preceding point. Betty? Okay. Nehemiah 13, 1. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. The curse of Ham? I don't know that they really have any evidence for that, but if you were to go back 100, 150 years, you'd find some sermons. I mean, this was being preached in some places, and there were a lot of articles being written about it, but they would say, well, you know, they thought that the Cushites, you know, would have been dark-skinned people, and they try to trace that back to Ham and just say, this was the curse. No, it's like, and that's why I said people will take a position and then they'll start looking in the Bible for something to support their view. And just with time and the way things, you know, it sometimes is like an error. It starts out with maybe just a hint of truth, and before you know what has taken place, just about everybody believes it. Well, everybody believes that. Well, you do, but let's go back and look at where that came from. And there's virtually no truth in it.
It mentions here Ham. This ought to be starting with Canaanites. What about the other two? Does it really say in this section that they're going to be over a particular area, or who their descendants are going to be?
Some people have tried to track that ray, and I could say genealogy is not really my thing. But when I've gone back and looked at that with some people, I think that there's probably some truth there as far as trying to use those three boys to trace out all human history, and there are probably some that we can be pretty definitive on, but then there's some others, as you go back and you start trying to trace out some of the lineage, I think some of that gets a little spotty. So even with genealogies today, people will say, well, we think after you go so far back, this is where it goes, but we're so far distant from that. I mean, you're going back thousands of years. And that just gets to be a little uncertain.
Later on, as you read farther in the Genesis, you'll find out who some of their children are.
Yes.
But in this particular chapter here, chapter 9, we don't see any of that.
Right.
That's what I was kind of wondering, why Ham was so pointed out here in verse 19.
Yeah.
You know, before verse 25, now before Noah said anything about it.
Well, it kind of goes, I think, back to Betty's question. People get an idea, and they want to promote the idea. And if you don't like a certain skin color, you're going to find whatever works for you. A lot of people believe the Bible, so let's search throughout the Bible and see if we can find something that'll sort of support our cause. And that's sort of where they pitched their tent with Genesis 9. Okay, let's go back and pick up, before we look at Nehemiah chapter 13, 1-3, this question, point 27. Are there ever times when people should somehow be classed or divided? Maybe segregated. Are there times when that ever would be proper and right?
Maybe for
convenience. Okay, could you make that a little more specific? Okay.
So this is where we're going to put the 2 to 5 year olds and the 30 to 50 year olds.
Okay. Maybe you have a safety issue and limited space. Maybe it's a safety issue. So you say we're going to put the younger ones here because this is a secure environment, this is further from the road or whatever. So you might have it for those reasons. Gary?
You say classes. First thing I thought of was flights. They have business class, first class, and coach. And then when the comes more into play when they're exiting,
but that wouldn't be so much based on things like skin color or gender.
Oh.
There you're dealing with really an economic situation, or you're dealing with convenience. We're going to deplane the people who are in this section prior to that section. So good answer, but we want to see if we can restrict that to the things that we were discussing today.
Restrooms.
All right, you think about that. Sure, you're going to say we've got the ladies over here, and we've got the male facilities over here. So sometimes when it comes to matters of hygiene, or sometimes you need to use the facilities, there's that. Any other times where you might find that there's that separation?
There are certain scholarships that are based on your lineage, and that could obviously be attached to race.
Yeah. Native American, they might say you qualify for these kinds of things. We've seen some schools, they will, for example, say if
qualify as far as this. When it comes to race, you're going to be over here. What about some all-female schools? Do they exist?
Yeah.
All-girl schools?
Yes.
We've got those. I think if you go back, and you can probably find, now that may have changed a little bit, but at least in the past, there used to be some military academies. And I don't think those were girls' schools. I think those were all-boys schools. So sometimes when it comes to the educational system, you will have that there. Anything else when it comes to segregation?
I don't know if it still is, but years ago there was a YMCA and a YWCA, and they divided them that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know if that's not still.
Yeah, they've changed that around. I think that used to be the Young Men Christian Association, and they didn't like the C, so they have revised the name a little bit, or the designation. So you do see that sometimes. So when the world comes along and says, well, you know, you believe in segregation and those kinds of things, if you do a little thinking, you can point out, look, you do as well. You have some schools, or you offer some scholarships based on race and those kinds of things. So if you're saying that that's never right, then why are you doing these things? But there can be times where that is right. Perhaps that needs to be done. For example, I can't give you some specifics here, but if you're in the medical field, too bad Marcia is not here. I do know that based on your heritage, if you are a dark-skinned person and there is a medicine that you are offered as a dark-skinned person, you either don't want it or you want to be very, very careful. Because if you have lighter skin, you can take the medicine and all things are fine. But for whatever reason, there are some differences there as far as something in the genetics that if you are a darker-skinned person, that medicine could be deadly to you. I can't give you exactly offhand what one of those medicines would be, but I do know that there are some drugs that fall into that category. So if you were a prescribing doctor, that would be one of the things that you would want to take into account. Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 1 through 3. Who has it and is ready to go? All right, Bonnie. Okay, did God make a distinction here? Yes, he did. Did he distinguish based on, well, I just don't like where you're from, I just don't like your ancestry, so we're going to cross you off? No. And that's the distinction that I'm trying to bring out here. We might in some cases have a separation, or we might argue that there are people who need to be classed differently, but that's never based on what, if we're doing things correctly? That's never based on color. That's not based on family ancestry. It's not those kinds of things. It's going to be based on maybe a health consideration, or it's going to be based on activity, those kinds of things. And the world sometimes fails to make that kind of distinction. They just say, well, you're a racist, or you're a bigot, or you're those kinds of things. No, no. Sometimes those distinctions do need to be made. But if it's just a matter of saying, well, you're of this color, or you're this family, and we're going to not recognize you or not accept you, then that's where things become problematic. Trace?
Well, I thought that the segregation was more because of religion and the belief system, because they will continue to teach against God, basically.
Yes. And there is that, too. That can also be a key reason. Any other thoughts before we move down and talk about this from a different perspective? Okay, if we have the racism, the bigotry, the discrimination in our world, the question then becomes, how can we respond to it in a biblical way? Well, let's get three helpers here. Ephesians 4:32, Romans 12, 18 and 19, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 44. Who wants to be moving to Ephesians 4? Betty, verse 32, Lois will ask you to pick up Romans 12, 18, and then after that, verse 19, and then Matthew chapter 5 and verse 44. Who will take that one? Gary. All right, if you're ready, Ephesians 4:32.
Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God also forgave you.
3 points. Number one, Paul says be kind one to another. Number two, be tender-hearted. And number three, be forgiving. When we find racial issues in our culture, and we do find that kind of problem oftentimes, how do people typically respond?
All right, I think anger is probably going to be the first emotion that comes to mind, and there's not going to be a lot of kindness and hardly any tenderness involved. But Paul said if you're working at things from a Christian perspective, then this is a general way to live your life, and it certainly would include problems related to race. All right, Romans chapter 12, we start with verse 18. Lois.
If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men.
Okay, that's our goal. And sometimes when it comes to things in the area of discrimination, people might discriminate against us. You know, we might think that discrimination is generally launched towards this race or this skin color, and it can work in both directions. And Paul said if you're involved in that kind of thing or something else, try to be peaceful and remain on good terms with people. Verse 19 as well.
Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord.
Thank you. Imagine if our world lived by Romans 12, 19. Problem with race, suffer discrimination, let God handle the matter. But that's not typically what our world wants. Matthew 5, 44, Gary.
But I say unto you, love your enemies, pray for them that persecute you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you.
Okay. If somebody engages in racist, discriminatory behavior, what did Jesus say? Pray for them, because they may not be the worst enemy that we have, but they certainly would qualify as someone who is opposed to us. Paul, as he wrote to Titus in Titus chapter 3, verses 2 through 3, pictures the situation. Well, let's just head over there and look at that as a class. Had a lot of bad stuff going on when it comes to the island of Crete, the people who were Cretans. Even today, when we hear the word Cretan, that's a word that's generally not looked upon in a favorable way. And Paul says to speak evil of how many people? No man, Titus 3:2. Not to be contentious, but he said, I want you to be gentle, similar to Ephesians 4:32. And then he says this, for we also once were foolish. There was a time where we'd been disobedient. There was a period when we'd been deceived. We had served divers lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy, hateful, hating one another. Doesn't that sound a lot like the people who are often involved with racist behavior? And Paul says, look, he said, you guys lived that way for a period of time, but you've learned better, and you know the right road. But he said, for the people who don't know better, let's go back and look at that one more time. He said, to speak evil of no man, not to be contentious, be gentle, showing all meekness, for we also once were foolish. He says, you live this new life. Why? You know what the old's like. And you've come out of that. And as you're dealing with some of the people who are still living that old life, he said, what should you do? You need to remember, and you need to be mindful that those fellows haven't quite come to the truth yet. And hopefully, they'll also obey the gospel. But remember that not everybody has arrived at this point, and that's helpful to us. Anything you want to add or ask before we pick up with Philippians 2:15? Okay, we talked about being a light to the world, and when we think about those who are involved with racism and discrimination, Paul says you try to be that light. And then Peter's point in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 20, always endure. Continue to do what's right. Final thoughts before we turn over to the book of Acts. Bonnie?
All this conversation makes me think of when Margaret and I were raising our kids, and we would take them to youth rallies, and as we were traveling, we'd be all together. We just couldn't believe how many heads would turn just staring at us going down the highway, because here was four black people and three white people all in the same car.
Yeah.
One time we went to Chicago and it was, it was very noticeable to Margaret and I hope the kids didn't notice it as much as we did, but it was very noticeable to us how the way we were reacting.
It's somewhat more muted now. Maybe part of that's online, maybe part of it's because of where we are as far as the time period in human history. But you go back 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 60 years, and maybe it's still as bad now. Like I say, it's just taken a little different form. But
this was in the 90s.
Yeah, so like I say, you're going back 25 years or so, where you're still in that period where people raised some eyebrows and said some things, and it was especially noticeable. And we've, like I say, in some respects gotten better, but I think in some other respects, we've gotten worse.
because we've moved it from here now to online. We talked about the Gab site as far as the internet site where people just spew some really bad things online. So it is a problem, and Christians should be willing to help with it. That it? Okay, let's take a look at Acts chapter 10, verses 34. That section is kind of what launched this study. And going back and reading that, let's just start with 33. Forthwith, therefore, I sent to thee, that would, of course, been Cornelius talking to Peter. Peter's come to the house, and thou hast done well that thou art come. Now, therefore, we are all here, present in the sight of God, to hear all things that have been commanded thee of the Lord. 34, and Peter openeth his mouth and said, of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. Now, that word which is translated respecter of persons, there's a single word behind that entire expression, and that word is found only here in the New Testament. If all are equal in the sight of God, and this is one of the odd things, when people, especially back in the mid to late 1800s, when they were talking about Genesis 9, the curse of Ham, they would affirm that all people were equal. But then they turn right around and say, well, if you have dark skin, you're under the curse of Ham. And to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. You would think that if everybody is equal, that means that everybody is equal. But they were saying this on the one hand, and they were arguing there was a lack of equality on the other side. But if we look at it from what Peter's saying here, God is no respecter of persons. What does that say about God when it comes to his rules for people? All right. The set of rules that I have for the you who are in America, it's going to be the same set of rules for the people who are over there in Russia or Africa or India. You can just pick your country. And not only are the rules the same, God says my requirements are the same. If I require this of you to be saved, then when it comes to you, am I going to require more or am I going to require less? I can't. If I'm going to be a fair and equitable God, whatever I require from you, I've got to also require from you as well. So all people, when we look at the New Testament era, are going to be seen as completely equal. Here Peter sums up God's standard for men with two different ideas. Number one, he says you need to, but in every nation, he that, number one, does what? He that fears him, Acts 10:35, and then he that also works righteousness is going to be acceptable to him. Now when you see that word fear, what do you think Peter was trying to convey to Cornelius? You need to fear God if you want to be acceptable to him. All right, there's that reverential fear for God. You look at God and you say, I'm the creation. I understand that I have some obligations and I want to submit to those. Working righteousness would go hand in hand with that. We need to be people who are willing to do God's will. The word which is translated work is a verb and it's also expressed with the present tense. One source said it implies a person throws himself energetically into a steadfast mode of obedience. We've seen that word righteousness before. We know that that means a person is in a right, he's in an acceptable relationship with God. 1 John 3 and verse 7 would be a cross-reference. One source asked how anyone could read this passage and deny that working is an integral part of the scheme of redemption. There was a Baptist scholar by the name of A.T. Robertson, very, very good with the Greek text, and he provides all kinds of great information as far as a study of the original language, and yet when it comes to Acts chapter 10 and verse 35, he just passed over the verse. He didn't let his study of the word affect his theology. In other words, he was somebody who said, I have my belief, and if there's anything that comes along and doesn't square with my belief, then what's going to win out? God's word or my belief? My belief. And that's sad. But it can be related to a lot of different things. Sometimes discrimination, sometimes a matter such as this, but people have their idea and they're going to stick with it regardless. Anything you want to add or ask before we move down to Acts 10, 36 and 37?
And that racism, that is something that is taught.
It is.
So if parents believe that, they're going to bring their children up like that too.
Sure, you imagine a little child, 3, 4, 5 years old. Race A of this child, race B of this child, and there's a definite difference as far as skin color. And you have a racist parent, sees his or her child over there playing with the other one, and comes and grabs the 4 or 5-year-old child. I mean, they're having a lot of fun. Well, the child's obviously confused and probably going to ask, what question? Why or what's wrong? What happened? What'd I do? What'd he do? I mean, we're having fun. We weren't fighting. And then the mom or the dad's going to probably give what statement to the child? We don't associate with people like that. Well, okay, the child's mind is thinking, well, no, what does that mean? I mean, he was playing, he's a child, and we were having a good time. That color skin. And you think the child's going to remember that? Yes. And you reinforce that behavior a few times, and it's just going to get worse. So that's very easy to perpetuate. And like I say, it's still a big part of the world, and that's very unfortunate. That it? Okay, let's pick up with Acts 10, 36 and 37. The word which he sent unto the children of Israel, preaching good tidings of peace by Jesus Christ, he is Lord of all. 37, that saying ye yourselves know, which was published throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee, after the baptism which John preached. Okay, before providing some information about Jesus, we'll see that in Acts chapter 10 and verse 38, Peter spoke about the word which God had sent to the children of Israel. And Peter describes that word. He says it was the good tidings of peace by Jesus Christ. That is, it was the doctrine of Christ. It was the information about the Lord, the New Testament that we might think of today. And Peter says that that information, it had been published. It had been taken how far? How widely? Was it contained in a small area or had been spread out in a lot of different places? He said it goes throughout all Judea and even in the area of, where did it begin? Galilee. And then Peter said something else about this, didn't he? He says, the word which he sent unto the children of Israel, preaching good tidings, the saying, this is verse 37, that you yourselves know. What does that tell you about Cornelius, his household, and the information about Jesus? Was Peter the first one to come along and say, I've got some information about Christ? And no. These people had already heard that. We've touched on this a little bit before, but somehow Cornelius and others had gotten word about the Lord. Now, if you think about Galilee, was not going to be that far from Caesarea. And you have this Jesus, he's working the countryside, and he's out there for about 3 years, healing all kinds of people, offering some great teachings, raising the dead, casting out demons. That word's got to spread. So Cornelius, the people who were there with him, we don't know exactly how much they knew about the Lord, but at least there was a little bit of a foundation in their mind before Peter came and showed up. The statement about this going throughout all Judea once again reinforces just how widely the information about Christ had been spread. And then, of course, by going up there into Galilee, Jesus had reached what we might think of as even some outer edges. The Lord had great recognition when it came to his earthly ministry, but God didn't stop there. Then we've also got the death, and we've got the burial, and then we've got the resurrection. When you think about movies and books today, somebody sees a great movie, they see a great book, and if it's really good, what are they hoping for?
Sequel.
They're hoping for a sequel. Where is the next one? When's the second one coming out? And when you think about Jesus, it's almost like his death, his burial, and resurrection would have been the sequel. This is a great guy, but you're wondering what happens when he finally dies? What's going to happen after he's done all the healing? Well, here's chapter 2. And then after that, that's good news. But after you get the death, burial, and resurrection story, what are you thinking again? I mean, he did all this stuff, and he was raised from the dead. What's he doing now? And can that somehow impact my life? So Cornelius, many others would have been ready to hear the extra information. You also have, as you look at verse 36, a couple of the key points about Jesus and the information that was proclaimed about him. Number one, what did Peter say? What's that key word? Starts with P, ends with E. Through Christ there is peace. Why do you think that would have been an important message then and now? Through Christ there's peace. Well, let's back up. What do you think the word peace means? Then we'll ask why it's an important message. Peace. What kind of peace? Well, let's back up a little further. What kinds of peace are there? Peace. When people talk about peace.
Well, there's lack of war.
All right. There might be peace in the sense that there's no fighting. Peace in what other sense? All right. We think about a peaceful environment. There is not a lot of infighting, bickering. People are getting along. There's that kind of peace. What else do we think about peace? All right. There's that. What about tranquility?
You see an animal lying somewhere and you think, boy, that animal, the dog or the cat, is sure at peace. You know, maybe the cat's purring, the dog's kind of all stretched out. Is there inward peace for people? People sometimes say, I'm not at rest. I have so much stuff going through my mind. Other times a person will say, I just feel so peaceful. I feel so at rest. There's just nothing really that's agitating me. And then the most important kind of peace is what kind of peace? We have the peace of God because we have made our relationship with God correct. We've been freed from sin. So Peter comes along and says, I've got a message of peace. Do you think he's talking about no war? No. Do you think he's talking about the kind of peace where it's just peaceful in the home? No. What kind of peace? Well, okay, there's the peace now that we have with God. There's forgiveness of sins. And also, if you have that peace, then what about the inward peace? You should have at least some of that. So that's an important message of the gospel. Paul talked about in Romans chapter 5 and verse 1, Romans 5, 1, and also Ephesians 2, 14, about the fact that sin separates people from God, but we now have peace through Jesus Christ. Okay, and then as you look at the end of verse 36, he says something else. He says, Jesus is Lord of all. What does that tell you about Christ? Jesus has all, okay, power, plus we might say all authority. We saw that earlier when you go back and you start looking at the Great Commission, Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20, and even over there in the book of John, chapter 17 and verse 2, Jesus said, I have authority over all flesh. And if he has that authority, then he's someone that we need to listen to and ultimately obey. Now, going back for just a second, thinking about where this information about Jesus was preached, you've got the peace and the authority of Christ. Why? Well, let me reverse that. Could God have brought Jesus to any place on the earth? Sure. Why pick Judea? Why go over there to that section that's known as Israel? Why send him over there? Well, it was. I think that's a real good answer as far as the main answer. But can we break that down a little bit? Why was that his plan? Sure, you've got the capital there. You've got the temple in Jerusalem. So if you're going to send somebody, maybe send them to the place where you sort of have home base. There was that. That's important. So good answer, good answer. But let's see if we can take that one step further. Gary?
Well, if there's any tension in the world, it's going to stem from where all of the culture is taught.
Okay, that's the final good answer. If you are going to put out a product, and you want your product to succeed out there in the business world, do you think you need to test your product? Let's say that you're going to produce some luggage, and you're going to hopefully make this the number one selling luggage. Now, you find somebody that can box it up nicely, and you've got the packaging. And you find some other people that can do well with colors, and you make sure that you've got the nice color scheme. And you find somebody else who knows all the stuff about pockets and so forth. And, I mean, you've got the nicest looking piece of luggage that anybody can find. And you've even been able to bring it in at a good price. What's the other thing that you need to do? Well, there's that.
Test it.
You need to test it, right? If you send out some untested luggage, now maybe you're going to get lucky and it's going to work. But if you send out some untested luggage and with the first time it gets banged around in the airport, I mean, you have a hole and there's a big, you know, chunk missing over here, it can look as nice as any luggage can look. And it can be inexpensive and it can have all the great pockets, but if it doesn't hold up, nobody's going to buy it. You've got a piece of
zoo so the gorillas can jump on.
That's right. You need to take it out and you need to have somebody really test it. And that's why we see those crazy commercials. Remember, they drop it from the helicopter or they drop something big on it and really try to tear it up. They test it. If God was going to send Jesus into the world, he was going to be the Savior, where do you think it would have made sense to give him the most rigorous testing? You send him over to the people who had been God's people for a long time. They'd been exposed to false prophets. They'd seen some shenanigans pulled by people. And you send him over to the place where the temple is. And you send him over to some people who are going to oppose him. Or you send him over to some people who are going to embrace him. Well, both, but especially the antagonists. You send him over to the very worst. You sent him over to the people who were going to grill him for 3 years. You sent him over to the people who were going to hate him so badly that they're going to say, we want him to be crucified. And if he can withstand that, guess what? Anything can withstand the gospel. So God used the most rigorous place to test Jesus. He succeeded. The apostles succeeded in that same area. Remember Acts 1:8? Jesus said where? You preach the gospel where? Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, Galilee. You start in the most difficult place. And if you can succeed there, you can succeed anywhere. So again, when you take those three answers together, I think that gives you a pretty comprehensive response. Gary? Okay. Is there somebody else? Oh, Tim.
I think also that those people in that area, they were looking for a leader. They were looking for a military leader.
Yes.
And God was showing them that they were going to get a leader, but that is not the kind of leader that they not only were not going to get, that's not the kind of leader they needed.
Yeah. And that's true. And they needed to figure that out. Some of them did. Some of them are still kind of waiting today, but some of them finally got the message. Okay, let's take a look at Acts chapter 10, verse 38. Even Jesus of Nazareth, how God anointed him with the Holy Spirit and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. How many members of the Godhead do you have in this verse? Yeah. Number one is Jesus, and then you have God, the Father, and then you have a reference, of course, to the Holy Spirit. Nazareth, what do we associate that when it comes to Jesus? We associate that with what when it comes to the Lord's life? Nazareth was, all right, that was right. Matthew chapter 2 and verse 23, at the proper time, Jesus was anointed with the Holy Spirit. Why do you think that statement is made? Jesus was anointed with the Spirit. What's that trying to convey to us? Anointed as the Messiah, the Christ, the promised one that we were talking about just a little bit ago. Did Jesus show his power? Yes. Text says that he went about healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. Notice this little point before we talk about the demons. Possessed by Satan also meant that one was, it's in the verse. If you were possessed by the demon, you were also oppressed, right?
We're under the influence of the devil.
Well, yes. And oppressed in the sense that you feel like your life has been surrendered, lost. You're not in control of your life anymore. But demon possession, it was not just an unpleasant thing. But the people actually were oppressed by the devil if they were possessed by that evil spirit. Now, we've talked about this before, and sometimes this is something, I guess, that's a little easier to see than other times. But when we use the word all, sometimes that means all in the sense of every single one. Other times we use the word all and we don't mean every single one. We simply mean a lot. As we look at Acts 10:38, middle of the verse, Jesus, he's going about, he's doing good. How many is he healing that were oppressed of the devil? All. Would you say that that all means all in the sense of every single one? Or would you say that this is all in a whole bunch? What do you think? All right, I think if you want to take the all in that more universal sense, all that came to him, or maybe all in that area, why would we not want to say that all means every single one?
Every single one of the earth?
Yeah. Where Jesus, before he goes to the cross, why would we not want to say that he is able to find all the demon-possessed people? Well, okay, I think that might be one answer that we could give. Sure, that would.
And he did heal the ones that were wrong.
Was there another answer back there, too? What did Jesus say? Oh, Gary?
He had to accompany his teaching with the healing, and if you just heal without any contact or anything, then there's not going to be any teaching associated with it.
Okay, I'm going to pick up on that answer and add a little bit to it. Remember Mark's account? Jesus said, go. He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. And these signs shall accompany them that believe in my name. They're going to speak with new tongues. They shall take up serpents if they drink any deadly thing. And you're also going to have the power to do what? Cast out demons. Why would Jesus promise something if he took care of all the demons? So here's the value of you have a statement, and maybe you're trying to kind of figure it out, and if you will take that statement and combine some of the passages with it, all of a sudden it becomes clear. So Mark 16:17 would be one suggestion. And then let's take a look. Let's go back a little bit in the book of Acts. Over there in Acts chapter 5, verse 16. And there also came together the multitude from the cities round about Jerusalem, bringing who? Sick people, and them that were who? Vexed with unclean spirits. So do you think that Jesus cleaned up all the evil spirits? Not literally. And you have some other examples of that. If you skipped over, let's take a look at this one too. Acts chapter 8 and verse 7, I believe. This is Philip. He's gone down to the area of Samaria. For many of them that had unclean spirits, they came out crying out with a loud voice, and many of them that were palsied and lame were healed. You could look, I think, also at Acts chapter 19, verses 14 through 16. There was a maid with a spirit of divination, and Paul was able to cast out that spirit as well. Now, this is a good representation of some other things. People come along and they'll say, well, look, we've got this statement in the Bible. Case in point would be belief. The Bible says, believe and be saved. Well, it does say that. But if you're going to take that statement and you're going to isolate that from some other statements, you might not be coming out with what is correct. So in this particular case, if all you took was Acts 10:38, Jesus healed all that were oppressed of the devil, that would leave you with one conclusion. But when you start taking everything that is said about that, you begin to find that the other passages help us understand what is meant by Peter in Acts chapter 10 and verse 38. So take everything that is said about something rather than just a part. Anything that you want to add or ask on that point? Okay, well, let's at least read Acts chapter 10, verses 39 to 41. This is going to be a good place to break the class. Peter said, and we are witnesses of how many of these things? All these things, which he did both in the country of the Jews and in Jerusalem, whom also they slew, hanging him on a tree. Him God raised up the third day and gave him to be made manifest, not to all the people, but unto witnesses that were chosen before God, even to us, who ate and drank with him after he rose from the dead. He has a lot to say, but the first thing that I think I want to point out, and this is kind of where we'll leave it in today's class, you might have a person who has secondhand testimony about something, a secondhand witness. If a person is a secondhand witness, could their testimony be valuable? It might be of some use. But really, if you want good testimony, reliable testimony, who do you want? You want someone who was there. And yet, as you look at the first-hand testimony here, he says, we are witnesses of how many of these things? Not one or two or three or four. Of all these things. So when Cornelius has this fellow come to him, Peter says, look, we, not just me, but there are some other people. We saw all kinds of things. We were with Jesus a long time. And we can help you understand the gospel of Christ.